Psalm 19. You'll notice the superscript says, "To the chief musician, the Psalm of David." I'm going to suggest that whenever you read the Psalms, you always read the superscript with it. I like Scorby's recording of the Bible, but I have one objection to it. When it comes to the Psalms, he never reads the superscripts. I would suggest to you that the superscripts are just as inspired as the text itself. And I think Habakkuk proves that in Habakkuk chapter 2. Okay, so we've read the superscript. "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where the voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words unto the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping of them there is great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my Redeemer." No doubt God will bless to us his word. David is described in 2 Samuel 23 as the sweet psalmist of Israel. I think if I remember rightly, in the Psalter, the 150 Psalms, I think it's 73 of them are directly attributed to David. Most of us will be aware of the fact that the book of the Psalms is actually divided up into five books. And I'm not going to go over the five books, but the first book of the Psalms is Psalm 1 to 41. And out of the 41 Psalms, 37 of them are directly attributed to David. Added to that, Peter describes Psalm 2, which isn't attributed to anyone, as being a psalm of David. So that makes 38 out of 41. I'm going to suggest to you that very likely David wrote all the psalms in the first book, and that's why they would have been put together for that reason. And so these are all psalms of David. Now, we don't know exactly when David wrote this psalm. There is nothing in the psalm itself to indicate when he wrote it. But I do believe that matter concerning this psalm was conceived in David's heart when he was a young shepherd boy. I can just imagine David in the night watching over the sheep, sitting perhaps on a knoll of the hill, under a tree, watching over the sheep. And as he's watching over the sheep, he lifts up his eyes to the heavens. David was a man who appreciated nature. I hope you and I appreciate nature. It is such a beautiful thing. Okay, let's think then about what it says here in the psalm. It says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork." Now the psalm divides up into two parts. Verses 1 to 6, we have the witness of nature. Verses 7 to 14, we have the witness of the Word. And they both relate to the revelation of God. So you'll notice that we have, first of all, in verses 1 to 6, the revelation of God in the heavens. He says, "The heavens declare the glory of God." And let you know that the word heavens there is dual. In Hebrew, I understand, you have singular, dual, and plural. For example, if you were to go back to Genesis 1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. It's in the dual, not the plural. In other words, God created the atmospheric and starry heavens. And that, I believe, is what is referred to here. The heavens declare the glory of God. And then he says, "The firmament showeth his handiwork." So now he brings it down, and now he's speaking particularly about the atmospheric heavens. And so we have, first of all, the witness of God in the starry heavens. I want you to notice, please, that the word declare actually has the idea of scoring with a mark or inscribing. That's a permanent record. I remember when I was young, maybe about 21 years of age, another brother and I went up the mountainside in South Wales on what was called the Bulch Mountain, and he showed me something I had never seen before. He showed me an area in the rock where scriptures had been inscribed in English, Welsh, French, and Latin. And they had been there since the Welsh Revival in 1904. They were very permanent. Well, this is what our text says. The heavens declare the glory of God. You know, I miss having a dog. Since we've been married, we've had two different dogs, but of course it's not practical now with me traveling to be able to have a dog. It's not just the dog. I mean, I love dogs, but one advantage of me having a dog was I had to take the dog for walks. I would take her for 5 miles in the morning, and then a mile in the afternoon, and a mile in the evening. And the evening was particularly beautiful. I would go over to the high school over here. And once you get out into the fields, there are no unnatural lights to obscure your view. And to look up into the sky and to see the stars and to see the moon, just such a beautiful sight. And I can remember one occasion being out there. I had seen the northern lights a number of times, but never like this occasion. They were not only grand, but they were in the north, but they actually slightly south of me as well. And as I looked up into the northern lights, it was like a funnel. I could see right up into the northern lights, and I could just imagine the Lord Jesus coming through that funnel to take us home to be with the Lord Jesus. To me, it was a wonderful experience. Do you really enjoy the heavens? Now, I don't know how true it is, but they say that the universe is about 46 light years in diameter. I can't even imagine what that is. You know what a light year is? Light travels at the speed, so they say, of 186,000 miles a second. I've never taken a stopwatch to check it out, but they say that's how fast it travels. If light could bend around the earth, light would go round the circumference of the earth over 7 times in 1 second. But traveling at the speed of light, if you could, if you started at one end of our universe, it would take you 46 billion years to reach the other end. And I heard just recently that now they think they found another universe out there. It's just absolutely mind-boggling to think of it. Have you ever watched any videos of the universe, of the stars, of the nebulae? They're so beautiful. You know, they say that our Earth could fit into the sun 1,000,000 times. And the sun is by no means the largest star in the heavens. Far bigger than the Earth is Arcturus. Bigger still is Betelgeuse. It always strikes me as a funny name, but it's just colossal. You know, they say, and I don't have a calculator that will go this far, but they say there are at least 100 billion stars in our galaxy. And they say there are at least 100 billion galaxies in the universe. There are more stars in space than there are grains of sand on the earth. Can your mind take that in? Just how vast everything is? And it's all a gigantic watch. You know what the watch is like? The old-fashioned watches, you know, that had all sorts of cogs and springs and everything. The universe is like that. All the various planets in our galaxy and the stars in space, they're all moving in relation to one another. The whole universe is moving as a gigantic clock. It all speaks of design. Now, I'm not here to defend creation against evolution. I don't think with an audience like this I need to do that. But I do think that it would do us all a world of good just to be able to go for a walk in the evening in the countryside and just look up there and see what's up there. It certainly makes us seem so very, very small. Now David, I'm sure, didn't have the concepts of the largeness of the universe as we have it today. But David could see something in the universe that most people, most scientists can't see today. He said, "The heavens declare the glory of God." And as we look up there and see the beauty of the universe, see those stars moving around the universe, it's just amazing to look at. So he says, "The heavens declare the glory of God." And then he says, "The firmament showeth his handiwork." Now, don't get the idea that all he's talking about is the birds that fly in the air and that sort of thing. You know, the world is like a gigantic light bulb. For light to be able to emanate all over the place in a light bulb, there has to be gas in the light bulb. And that spreads the rays of the light so that it'll light up a room. Well, the earth is like that. And the firmament is the gas in the light. Put it this way. If say you and I could live on an earth without having to breathe,
And there was no atmosphere in the world. As the sun shone down on the earth, you would only see the exact objects as the sun lights on them on the earth. Everything else would be black. You wouldn't see a blue sky. You wouldn't see those beautiful clouds that appear in the sky. None of these things would be visible to us. But we have an atmosphere. And that enables us to see wonderful things in this world. Not only things actually in the sky, but even things on the earth that we wouldn't see otherwise. You know, I used to take my walk, as I say, a dog for a walk every morning. And I can remember one day, it was winter time. And we walked north up here, and then when we got to a particular road, I went down to the river, and then I turned south to go down the river. It was a beautiful sunny day, a cloudless day, and there was maybe six inches of snow on the ground. And you know what happens when the sun shines? The surface of the snow will melt, and then during the night it refreezes, and it forms into crystal forms. And as we were walking south, I could see the sun shining in the crystals. And where it was far, if I remember the right way round, it just looked like stars. But nearer, I could see beautiful rainbows in the crystals. And that for me was a very emotional experience. At that time, on CBC Radio, at 12 noon, there's a program called Almanac. And at that time, because it was winter, they were wanting people to write in and in some poetic form, describe the horrors of winter. Well, I'm not a poet, but I put a few words together just on the spot there. And this is what I said to myself. Come winter. Come spring, come summer, come fall. God has written his signature upon them all. And whatever time of year it is, you'll see the handiwork of God here in this world. I used to love to walk up the mountain here. I would spend hours walking up right to the top, and then I would go north down to a landlocked lake, and then I would work my way back home again. One time, my son Mark and I went out about 9 o'clock one Saturday morning. We never got back until 6:30 in the evening. Took the dog with us. It's funny, she didn't want to go for a walk that night. Next morning, she was as bright as rain. But you know, every month, when I went up the mountainside, I would see different flowers, different plants growing on the mountainside. Yes, we actually have plants around Kamloops. And if you go over the ridge, you'll find it changes completely from the way it is down in the valley. There are big cedar trees up there. There's a ponderosa pine up there, not all that far up. I took a tape measure up once to measure it. This was years ago. It was 12 and a half feet around the trunk. So there are pretty big trees around here. You know, if you've never done it, go for a walk in the countryside and see what there is to see. When I was a boy, there was a popular children's writer in Britain by the name of Enid Blyton. She used to write lots of children's adventure stories for boys and for girls. Well, one Christmas, I was given an Enid Blyton book. But this one was different. It was about a boy who went to live with an uncle for a year. And this uncle was an avid naturalist. And every month of the year, the uncle took the little boy out for a walk in the countryside and showed them what there was to see every month of the year. I was infatuated by it. Oh, the wonder of this world in which our lot is cast. So, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork, Notice now, please, verse 2. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. What I want to see there is that the revelation of God is constant. There are no time pauses. It doesn't stop when the sun goes down. Whatever time of day it is, whatever season of the year it is, there is so much to see that uttereth knowledge, that reveals something about God. Showeth really means to plainly announce. And so day unto day uttereth speech. So you can go out in the daytime and see what there is to see. To see the various animals and insects that appear in the world in the daytime. You can go out here on the mountainside and you'll see the coyotes. Sometimes you might see a bear up there. Don't worry, it's not a grizzly bear. But you'll see bears around. And other creatures on the mountainside. And they all speak of God the Creator. But also, night unto night showeth knowledge. So if you go out for a walk in the night, there is so much to see in the night. You know, in the daytime, I go for a walk along the dike down here. And often, going for a walk along the dike, you'll hear the meadowlark. Oh, what a beautiful sound to hear the meadowlark. And then you go out in the night, and you might hear an owl or one of the other night birds. And they're all sorts of night creatures. You only see them in the night, normally at least. But they all show the knowledge of God. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. It's constant. Verse 3. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. It's not only constant, it's pervasive. There are no language barriers. There's no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. It could read, there is no speech nor words, their voice is not heard. But wherever it is, it's pervasive. And everybody can see it. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can be up in the Arctic, or down in the Antarctic, or in the middle of the Sahara Desert. I can remember being in the Sahara Desert. I was in Libya for 6 weeks back in the 1950s, and they took us out into the Sahara Desert. And I can remember seeing these horse-mounted police came round, and not long behind them came these beetles that were after what the horses left behind. And you can see things everywhere. You know, they usually think of a desert as being dead. But just look at the desert just after there's been a rainfall. It's absolutely beautiful to see the plants that will come up in the desert after a rainfall. And so it's pervasive. Verse 4. Their line is gone out through all the earth. And their words to the end of the world, in them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun. Verse 4, it's universal. There are no geographical boundaries. Their line, the word for line, is a measuring line. It speaks of the extent of their influence. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. So everywhere in the world there is evidence of God. That's why, of course, we're taught in Romans chapter 1 that the heathen are without excuse, because God has revealed his power in creation. And then he makes mention of the sun. So he distinguishes now the sun from the rest of the universe. Oh, by the way, have you ever noticed in Genesis 1 verse 1, it says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Have you noticed that the writer distinguishes between the heavens and the earth? Even though the earth is in the heavens, yet God distinguishes the heavens from the earth. You know, these people that are got these radio telescopes going out there, and they're all trying to find out if there's some kind of alien life out there. And they're still hoping against hope. They're talking about other galaxies where there are, they think, planets that are similar to Earth. Don't listen to them. There's only one place in which God has vested his interest, and that's the earth. It's to the earth that the Son of God came down in order to provide salvation for you and me. But here, he takes one small star from the universe and he uses that as an illustration. Verse 5. Which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber and rejoiceth as a strong man to run the race. First of all, I want you to notice that the sun is radiant in its rising, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. Now, I'm going to suggest to you that that speaks of the sunrise. Then you'll notice it goes on and says, and rejoiceth as a strong man to run the race. That, I believe, has reference to the sun as it moves through the sky. Now, I know, just as you know, that the sun does not go around the world. That the earth actually is spinning on its axis, and that's why the sun appears to be going around. Now, God knew that far better than we knew it. But he writes things as they appear to men. So he speaks about the sunrise and the sunset. Do you ever refer to the sunrise and the sunset? What? You know the sun doesn't rise and the sun doesn't set, but that's how it appears to us. And so that's why it is used in that way. So I want us then to notice, first of all, it's radiant in its rising. Here's the bridegroom. After the first night, he rises in the morning and it says here, his going forth, rather verse 5, which is a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, radiant in its rising. Secondly, it's unchallenged in its journey. Now, I know it's possible that this could be a reference to the sun as it moves through the universe, but really, I don't think so. I think it's as it was observed by David. And so he's talking about the sun as it moves, or appears to move at least through the skies, and rejoiceth as a strong man to run the race, unchallenged in its journey. Thirdly, he says, verse 6, his going forth, that is, I take it, the sun's going forth, is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends thereof. So it's unfailing in its circuit. I believe, again, that has to do with the sunset. So it moves through the heavens, and its going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends thereof. It's unfailing in its circuit. God is unfailing as he seeks to meet the need of you and me. Then notice, please, verse 7. I won't get on to the last section. Verse 6. His going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the end thereof. There is nothing hid from the heat thereof. It's not only unfailing in its circuit, but it's universal in its benevolence. The sun rises on the evil and the good. The rain falls on the evil and the good. And so it says here, there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. Everything in this world in which we live is influenced by this wonderful universe that God has given to us. So, good to study your Bible, but it's good to study God's creation too. Trust that God will bless His word to each one.